grass lawns. People expect to grow them wherever they call home. In the Greater Phoenix area, in its seventh year of drought, grass, the thirstiest of plants, is still king. While much of the desert Southwest embraces more water-wise landscapes, Phoenix has been slow to come around. NPR's Ketzel Levine met with some local gardeners who are pushing for change, digging up their lawns and taking the heat.
Morning at Casa La Mesa, a 1960s subdivision of modest stucco homes. Newspapers are still on stoops, front doors have yet to open, and already it's 100 degrees. Only one creature is stirring, a homeowner named Kathy. She's moving her sprinkler around a narrow patch of lawn. So narrow, she's also watering the sidewalk. Kathy loves the look of grass.
Yes, I do. I mean, we have to have something out here.
Did you grow up in the Southwest or someplace else?
Nope, I'm a native.
You're a native and you love the look of grass. You see, and that surprises me because I don't understand where you ever learned the look of grass.
Yeah, but I mean, we've never had all desert in this valley. I mean, everybody's always had grass or desert.
Lush green grass in this gasping summer heat is an oxymoron only to an outsider. The history of this valley tells a different story, a century of unlimited access to water. In the early 1900s, after a devastating drought, Phoenix initiated one of the first modern water harvesting systems in the country. The Salt River Project included dams for capturing and storing water and canals for delivering it to the valley. Colorado River access was then secured in the 1980s. The result? Water to flaunt in fountains, swimming pools, mist machines at outdoor restaurants, and water to soak lawns. Every summer, Kathy uses 2 inches a week to keep her grass green in a region that gets 7 inches a year. Kathy's neighbor, Jenny Ambrose, is incredulous.
People can water their yards as much as they want and use as much water. They can leave their hose running 24/7 if they want to.
What residents can't do is let water gush down the street. But that's it, says Jenny Ambrose, for any mandatory restrictions. She's pushing for voluntary change. In the year she's lived here, Jenny's joined the board of her homeowners association, launched a landscape committee, and now leads the campaign to replace common areas of grass with desert-adapted plants.
I don't get a sense that many people around here actually care about maybe some of the environmental impacts of overwater use and the drought and these sorts of things. I've been approaching them from the standpoint of their pocketbook and saying, if we can save some water, we can save some money.
Any hostility?
There are some people that I know once we sit down and start mapping out the details, we're going to get some resistance. And I can already feel that.
Dana, please join us for lunch.
As Jenny massages the system, an unlikely bunch of subversives have ripped out their lawns. On this day, they're meeting across town in the wealthier suburb of Scottsdale. Their agenda, a garden party.
You know, if I went to Florida, I wouldn't try and grow a cactus in the front yard.
The chatter flows like a Phoenix hose here in Dana Heiser's kitchen, the only sane place for a garden party on another three-digit day. Her guests are volunteers from the nearby Desert Botanical Garden, where Dana Heiser tells inquiring visitors how to grow plants.
I try not to give too much advice on how to grow grass.
What do you tell them?
I'll tell them how to kill it.
Dana Heiser had it with grass when she moved into her current home, a neighborhood like many, she says, of grass, gravel, and gumdrops, sheared to perfection. Landscapes featuring sentimental favorites like Japanese holly and boxwood, plants familiar to people who grew up on the East Coast or the Midwest. Dana Heiser had a vision of a native desert garden, so she planted one. Her neighbors were aghast.
One woman, she just flat out called it trash. They didn't even try to be nice about it. And then they threatened me with an attorney. They said, you're either going to fall in line here and get this landscape the look of the rest of the neighborhood, or we will get an attorney.
In the end, everyone compromised. Her garden isn't as wild as she'd hoped, but it certainly reads desert. Spikes, stones, and fleshy rosettes, Arizona yellow bells, and woolly-leaved Texas rangers. All this life on an extensive drip system and half the water bill from her days of lawn. It took a little coaxing to get the garden party outside. The splashing fountain helped. And the story swapping continued. More dispatches from the landscape wars. The police visited Margaret Kleinschmidt one night. Seems there have been complaints about her weeds.
So I took the two bicycle policemen out in my front yard and gave them an education in wildflowers.
Introducing them to the same wildflowers that light up the spring desert. Plants good enough for glossy calendars, but a little too exotic for the front yard. The police don't come knocking at the Kleinschmidts anymore, but they are still known to knock at other doors. Change is slow, though desert-friendly landscapes are more and more the norm with newer homes. The next frontier, it seems, is a tolerance for the quirkiness of desert plants. Strange, but all too true for gardener Lynn Levan.
The city of Chandler said we could choose any plants we want, we just had to keep them very neat looking, so that it didn't really look like a more natural desertscape.
In other words, as long as it was clipped, pruned, and tidy, she could grow it. Instead of hearing complaints from her neighbors, Lynn Levan moved to what she hopes is a more tolerant community. A little water does amazing things in a desert garden. You can grow a veritable candy land of plants. Fleshy, feathery, billowing, towering fuchsia, orange, electric blue. And why not a little grass? Kids and dogs love it. Maybe not wall-to-wall carpeting of the stuff, but a splash, a green pool. In all likelihood, Phoenix will launch the first of a 4-stage drought plan this fall, playing up the need for a new landscape language, a language that could get pretty heated. And lawn, once king, may become a very different 4-letter word. In the Valley of the Sun, for NPR News, I'm Ketza Levine.